This week's episode is brought to you by Tintash.
Oh God, one more podcast?
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Desi Standard Time. I am one of the Mazes, Maz Ali. I am joined by my lovely chap. What's going on? Go ahead and introduce yourself, man.
What's going on, guys? It's Maz Khan coming at you live right now from Atlanta, Georgia, where I'm visiting the fam as we're diving in deep into this season two. It's nice to see your face. Nice to see you doing well. I'm continually amazed by the advancements in technology that allow us to do this podcast from different any city we choose at this point, right?
I know. I don't think we'll ever see our friends again in person. I think that's done. That level of socializing is done. Who needs it?
Who needs the social interaction? You know, my parents were right. The first day, they said, you don't need friends. You don't need anything. You just study, and that's it.
And I know it's funny. You're right. I think you're right. But I don't know about how your parents were, but mine, on occasion when we would go on vacations or trips, we would do stuff and just watch everything from afar. Like if people were snowboarding, we would just be like, oh,
Very nice.
Okay. We're starting to do that with our own friends now, right? Let's go home now. Like it's just like they're ultimately the most happy.
The phenomenon of just like going to someone's house and like standing outside and saying what's up to them is such an interesting kind of thing, right? And like our parents are just like astounded, like pata bhi nahi kya kiya, bas uske ghar ke bahar jaake chale gaye aur bas dekh ke aa gaye. I was like, yeah, it's what we have to do to keep everyone alive, but I'm like, yeah, it's necessary. Yeah. But
I must give him a kiss on the cheeks. Like, come on, we gotta.
Yeah. You ready for the segue of the century right here?
Oh my God.
Speaking of things that our parents liked to view from afar, today's episode, what are we going to be talking about, Mosley? Tell them.
Oh my God. First off, standing O for that segue. You are a segue king.
Beautiful.
Next time we do this recording, I need to see you on an actual Segway rolling around as we record. But, folks, my dear friends, we're going to be talking about Qawwalis this episode. So Qawwalis, we talked about the last episode, Pakistani rock. Pakistani rock was sort of the grungier generation, our generation, kind of what we grew up on. So we decided to say, hey, let's talk about what our parents and the older generation were up to. So that is Qawwalis. Now, Qawwalis, if I was to give you guys a quick rundown of it, like 30,000 foot view, if you don't know, essentially it's a fusing of, I guess, music traditions from a lot of part of the Middle East. So Persia, Saudi, Turkey, India, Pakistan. And it was mostly predicated on Sufi mysticism. To translate further is the next dimension and furthering your love and the union between you and the divine. So pretty powerful stuff here. There's a lot of Qawwali artists. Go ahead. I'll let you chime in.
I was going to say, you know, you said it's a fusion of different traditions. My ear was fused to my headphones when my parents used to play this in the car growing up because I was like, man, who is this guy yelling into, you know, a mic and doing these songs? And I really didn't understand the beauty of it. And I think that, you know, as a kid, you're just like this loser in the car. You're just like, you know, what do my parents do? Stupid, man. My parents, they're like so not cool. Okay. They're not cool with any of the cool things that I want to do. And you rebel against them. You don't really understand what's so beautiful. And it's crazy. Now we're like growing up and we're like, oh man, they had it right. It's like,
oh yeah,
these are the things that now I like love and really like look forward to. And I think that's just an understanding thing, right? So understanding what Qawwali is and what makes it beautiful is a big part in making Qawwali, you know, for the masses, and what made it so popular, you know, mostly thanks to Nusrat, but you know, we'll get into that a little bit later. So
no, 100%.
Tell the people what a Qawwali is, you know, help them understand.
Yeah, absolutely. And before I do that, I had a lot of memories of Qawwalis playing in the car. Us picking up a friend and Qawwali's just blasting in. They look at me, they're like, what are we listening to? And I'd be just like, I don't know, man. And just occasionally in the middle of the night, you wake up, it's just like, hey, Allah, right? Just like, whoa. Um, And as I got older, as I started appreciating it, people were still like, what the hell are you listening to? I'm like, this is real music. I don't know about you, dog, but I'm in touch with the divine, at least I'm hoping to be. But honestly, it's for anyone who is trying to get more in touch with their spirituality. I feel it is a very spiritual type of music that attracts all walks of life. I think that's the most amazing part. So, you know, we'll dive into that a little bit more. There's a lot of Pakistani artists in the forefront, right? You mentioned one, Maz, Nusuf Dehli Khan. He's, I would like to say, probably the godfather of Qawwalis.
Definitely the godfather. He looked like the godfather, you know, the Jabba the Hutt, if you will, of Qawwali. Yes. You know, may his soul rest in peace. The guy, you know, did not have the best of health, but he gave the world... Gave the world. So I'm never gonna forget. You know, like the diff. We'll get into it. You know, we'll get into it.
I want to save that for that.
Yeah,
it's a big part of us, man. It's a big part of us. So no worries at all. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of family lineages that devout themselves to Qawwalis. The Fateh Ali Khans are one example, and there's many other houses of Qawwalis as well. Dive into it. But yeah, let's to break down what a Qawwali is. So Qawwali is the overarching, I guess, arena or stadium. Now, once you get into the sectionals, seats, right? There's different categories in the world of Qawwali, right? So there's Naats, which is about loving the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And then there's Munkabats, which is praising Imam Ali, one of the Sufi saints. A lot of, you know, sung by Sunnis as well as Shias. Then there's Marsiyas, right, which is lamenting over the death of Imam Hussein at Karbala. And typically, Qawwalis are composed of about 9 to 10 people, where the songs can go from as long as 10 to 15 minutes to 30 to maybe even 40, 45 minutes. Yeah. And very minimal instruments as well, right? Like the dolak, the tabla, harmonium, and a whole lot of vocal cords.
Right. And if you're used to what, like a Qawwali like stage or setting or concert or I guess whatever you call it, the dais looks like, it's, you know, the main guy who's singing or the main duo who's singing, and then they're surrounded by what's essentially their students. You know, they've got one guy who's essentially the next in line, and then they've got like they're surrounded by the school of people that they're basically putting together to harmonize along with them. And you're right. There's not a lot of instruments. You know, they have the harmonium, I guess. Is that the name for the piano with the kind of organ? Yeah. It's a very distinct, you know, selective sound. And then obviously they have a very distinct style of singing. So, you know, there is a very, we brought it up, it's a very religious aspect to it. I think that's what took away from it as a young child, you know, before I really got into it was, you know, this guy is just, he's clearly praising, you know, God, and kind of a lot of these songs have to do with a love for, you know, Allah basically. And, and how they're basically, you know, putting that into music form. So I think it's a very interesting art form, and it's very, very eclectic. You mentioned the houses, by the way, the my favorite part of you explaining that was, moving your arms around in that space that you've got there in the recording studio at Casa Mazali.
Oh, man. Do you like it? I mean, I'm proud of it, man. Look at this. It's like a little work to do, but...
Nah, it's super nice. I'm jealous. I'm here at, like, you know, got, like, random paintings in the wall behind me and stuff like that. But, I think it's such a cool thing to view. And everyone knows what it is. Anyone that's seen, like, Bollywood or is familiar with this... They've seen that guy, like, you know, sitting on stage with like one hand on one ear and then the other one just like, and he's just like crooning to the gods, basically. Everyone's familiar with that. And that's what Qawwali looks like almost every single time.
Right. No, so. 100%. Well said. And yeah, it's I think what always surprised me is that because, you know, you and I, we both grew up Muslim, and we would, it was a very sort of like a religious, you know, songs and what we would listen to, because it was very about, like you said, the prophet, about loving God. But I think what would surprise me time and time again is that you would go to these concerts, you would go to these events with so many people at the arena, and there's a lot of, you know, white people, there's a lot of just all walks of life, man. I mean, you would go and you would think, okay, I'm going to see people that look like you and I, but it's just literally everybody from the world. And so I think a lot of people don't realize that, is that these Qawwalis have touched and have had a really wide reach amongst the world. And it's a very, very popular, kind of a cultish popular music form, you know, based in obviously Sufi traditions. And there's, I think a lot of people define their spirituality in their own way. So I think if you have that inclination, I think this music is for you, and you get more and more into it. And I think that's what attracted so many people. And it was always fun. I mean, these concerts were so, for lack of a better term, just hilarious to me, because I'm just like, I did not expect to see that person there. I did not expect to see that person there. But damn it, this is beautiful. Look at us.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. And it really is. It's a spiritual experience, you know. So I guess to me, you know, I really started listening. So as a young kid, my dad is a huge Nusrat fan, and my mom is a huge She likes, I think, the lyrics. So she's a huge Abid the Parveen fan. We'll talk about these guys later. But,
yeah,
you know, there was definitely the music was being played in the cars, in our homes, through our, you know, speaker set. But
in our hearts,
to be honest, like, I didn't really start to listen to it until there's one song that really caught my attention. And it was, Tere bina nahi lagata dil mera dholna. And that really was the beginning of my kind of obsession with Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan and, you know, the whole Qawwali tradition. And then obviously following that with Rahat really helped and became kind of like a saving grace for our generation, because he exposed us, you know, he showed us to this whole side and this beautiful art form that really I didn't understand growing up. And we were a little bit too young, I think, during Nusrat, unless you were, you know, you had, and I think you'll be able to speak to that more because your family kind of has that background. But, you know, for me, it really became Rahat that really brought it all together for me. Saw him live 2 years ago in LA, and it was truly like a religious experience. I mean, it was so much fun. Shout out to Mary and Sabine going out there with me. And, you know, it's such a blast. I think there's two aspects to it. One is like, these guys are incredible singers. They're so good. They're like, they can you know, push it with the best of them. But at the same time, you know, the songs are beautiful and they're composed. There's a lot of repetition for sure, but the ideas are so simple and presented so beautifully that it's hard not to really like fall in love, not only with just the idea, but the presentation and just everything about the Qawwals. And I think that, you know, as I've gotten older, I've definitely become my parents and appreciated it more and really learned to love it. It's really something beautiful.
There's jazz elements to it as well. I feel like there's a lot of moments where they riff and they kind of scat on their own. Like, there's definitely scatting elements.
Right.
I think we talked about 100%. Before you mentioned it, where in scat, like in jazz, we like, you know, that, right? Like with that's my Louis Armstrong impersonation. Sorry,
but beautiful, beautiful.
In Qawwalis, it would be more like, you know, I mean, I'm horrible at it. I'm sorry, but
none of us humans could try to be that good. Let's be real.
You can't. You will hurt yourself trying to sing like a couple, man. Like, I had a friend die trying to sing like Nusrat, right?
But I hope not. That's terrible. My friend passed away in 2020. Oh, from COVID? No, he was trying to impersonate Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan.
Yeah.
What an idiot.
That's like suicide, bro. But and then there's moments where we mentioned like the harmonium, the tabla, the dolak, and small instruments here and there that are used. But during the Qawwali performances, they're highlighted. They introduce like a chabi gara, Ustad Zakir Hussain Saab, right? And then Zakir Hussain will do the tabla and kind of do his whole solo throughout the show. So amazing. Yeah, but for me, I think it really started with Nusrat, actually. My family was more so on the Sabri Brothers bandwagon.
Okay.
Not bandwagon, okay. But hype. And I remember listening to them, and my mom would be like, oh, they're so beautiful, they're so handsome, and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, on me. But listening to them, we would hear, and again, like as a kid, you would start listening to, you're like, what am I listening to? But it really pulls you in.
Yeah.
And it really, and it's genius. I mean, before you know it, 45 minutes have gone by, but they spend like the entire first 10 minutes just going,
Right. It's like when you go to when you go to a rock concert or whatever, and they tune the guitar that's already pre-tuned and clearly been tuned the entire show, but they're just like ding ding ding, and you're just like, all right, it could be one of like 8 songs, ding ding ding, and you're like, oh, okay, I've narrowed it down to like 2 songs, and it takes like 20 minutes for them to just get into. I'm thinking like Dave Matthews or like one of those guys, right? They're doing the live sets on stage. It's just like that. Like, they're just riffing for so long just to get into it. And it's part of the buildup.
More importantly, I feel like to get you into it. I feel like a lot of that subliminal and the chords are ding, 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 and you're like, nah. Nah. And then they look at you, go, ding, 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 and you're like, ooh.
It's the look.
Yes, the look. They hook you in, man. So
you just did something to my body.
Yeah. You're like, ooh, I felt that. But yeah, man. I think we grew up having a lot of music parties in my house with my extended family as well, my aunts, uncles, everybody. My dad would grab whatever type of plate or aluminum foil thing and just start banging on it with a spoon. Suddenly you have an instrument. But we had a lot of these music parties.
Not an instrument.
In my family. Yeah, that's not really an instrument. But we had a lot of those, growing up. And it was, I think that's what kind of looped me into this appreciation for music, this appreciation for these types of songs. It created a sense of nostalgia for me. So maybe even though I wasn't into it, throughout the 90s, maybe early 2000s, anytime I heard it, I was like, I remember that. It touches a special old memory for me. And then after that, that just kind of led me getting into it a lot more. So now I share these songs with my parents. And even when a Coke Studio song or a new Kawali drops, I'm like, Ami Abba, did you hear this new song? And
right,
I'm the one
right.
calling them now. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's funny how full circle happens.
It's the same. So, I think that we want to talk about the Mystics. We'll definitely dive into the Mystics a little bit further. But first, let's take a quick break, interval, and just hear from this week's South Asian Spotlight. So as they would at a Kavali concert, go load up on your water, your chai, your samosa, anything else to increase your spiritual stamina, and we'll return very shortly.
Take a shower.
Nice.
It seems that side hustles and new business ideas have become the norm for our generation. From building a website to turning a prototype into a working product, there's a lot that goes into actually making it happen. But how do you do so in a cost-effective and scalable way? For all our current or aspiring entrepreneurs out there, we turn to Tintash, a tech design and development studio with team members in the United States, Norway, Ukraine, and Pakistan. And with us today is Tintash's co-founder, Manan Amin. Manan, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Maz.
Now, Manan, you have an interesting story of soaking up all that Silicon Valley has to offer, and then packing that up and bringing that tech world to Pakistan. Tell me more about that.
Well, I came to Stanford for my master's in 2006. And during my time there, I got great exposure. And particularly found design thinking and the lean startup mindset extremely valuable. A year later, I was having breakfast at the famous Hobie's, used to be in Palo Alto, with my co-founder, Murad. And that's when we came up with the idea of Tintash, a studio where we could build remote teams for startups and companies.
And what an idea that is. I mean, one of the hardest and most expensive hires that startups have to make is engineering.
Exactly. And we wanted to remove those barriers, right, and allow you to hire the best talent while giving you great runway for your budget. So we brought our experience in the Valley to Pakistan, where our team has been growing since 2008.
And since then, it seems like you've helped build technical teams for a range of companies, including DraftKings, Bed Bath & Beyond, BBC Worldwide. I mean, these are some big names, and even our producer startup, Akio.
Well, you hire great people who get along really well, enable them with the right nurturing environment and challenging projects, and our clients are happy working with them.
I love that. That's great. Well, folks, if you're looking to get that side hustle off the ground, check out Tintash.com for all your tech and development needs. Thank you so much for joining us, Manan.
Thanks for having me, Maz.
All righty. Welcome back, everybody. We are discussing Qawwalis. In the first half, we were chiming in and talking about the origins of Qawwali, where they come from, what the hell they even are, if you have no idea what they are, what made us get into it, some of our favorite memories, and what to expect when you're in a Qawwali. So we'll dive into that a little bit more. We're going to talk about some artists or renowned people that if you're new to the Qawwali game, or if you're just here to reminisce with us, that we'll tell you to look out for. So we mentioned in the first half, Maz, Nusrat Fateh Khan, Rahat Fateh Khan, the Fateh Khan clan are probably the most notable. To name a few others, Sabri Brothers, Abdullah Parveen. But yeah, let's dive into it. I mean, you were discussing eloquently that Rahat Fateh Khan and Nusrat were, I think, your go-tos, right?
Yeah, so I think Nusrat, I mean, we have to pay homage to Nusrat because he's really the one that put Qawwali on the map and made it really an international kind of platform. And it wasn't just like a, you know, it's always been around for, you know, the Southeast Asian kind of folks. Like, you know, it definitely originated with India and, you know, Pakistan and Bangladesh and stuff like that. So it's always been around there. But to really take it somewhere, I think, international, you needed a special artist like Nusrat Fateh Khan, who has an incredible range and just had one of those distinctive voices that you can't forget, right? Like, you hear it once, and all of a sudden, it's there. So he's definitely the most, I think, recognized of all the Qawwals, you know, by far. He's definitely the one that took it to an international level. Yeah. I mean, if you go on, I'm just going on, you know, Wikipedia here and just kind of looking at the people that he influenced, the people who have noted him as an influence. You have everyone from like Zayn Malik and, you know, like I don't even know why I started there, Nadia Ali. But then you also have like Mick Jagger and Jeff Buckley and A.R. Rahman, who is, you know, in some ways the biggest South Asian musician of all time. And, you know, he had fans all over the world. He had people, you know, who traveled all over the world just to see him. And I think that's, it's crazy to think, you know, that this is just like a very spiritual kind of experience, very targeted, I guess, audience for music. And he was able to spread it across the globe. So hats off to my man, Nusrat. He really was the one to, I think, revolutionize the reach of Qawwalis. And, you know, since then, his nephew, Rahat Fateh Khan, who is part of the same school, part of the same lineage, part of the same family, learned underneath the Ustad, Nusrat, Ustad meaning teacher. And for me, he was the guy that, like, you know, I kind of, when I started to begin to like Qawwali and really came into my own as an adult, he's the one that I've, like, really looked up to as, like, the Qawwal of my generation, even though Nusrat kind of overlapped or whatever. So Rahat, you know, he's sold out a little bit to Bollywood. He obviously sings very normal songs, but I know that like one of the ones he did a cover of the original Afreen Afreen, and that, you know, on Coke Studio actually. Yeah. And that blew up and was I think the second coming almost of Nusrat for this younger generation. I know my sister, you know, she may or may not have ever heard of Nusrat's original version, but she's definitely heard Rahat's Afreen Afreen. So
right. You touched upon that. I mean, some notable songs of Nusrat, obviously Maskalandar, Afreen Afreen, Allahu,
Mere Rashke Kamar.
Yeah. Mere Rashke Kamar. Yeah. Tu ke pehli
nazar. My favorite is the ones where you're just like minding your own. It's like a meme, right? You're like minding your own business, then all of a sudden you just get like someone like popping in, like, the madam must the calendar. Where did it come from? It's crazy.
It's funny you mentioned that Nusrat was the forefront of really taking Qawwalis worldwide. And you mentioned that because my dad wasn't a fan of Nusrat. And it was for this reason, because we come from, again, the Sabri Brothers clan, which were very traditional, like, bakke, this is Qawwali, whether you like it or not. You don't like, get the hell out. type of feel. And we were really into them. And then my dad was just like, no, Nusrat's like way too commercial, blah, blah, blah. He will never forget. Nusrat came to Berkeley, a memorial at Berkeley Coliseum in 1994. Our entire community and family went. And my dad took everything he said about Nusrat back. He was like, no, Nusrat is GOAT. He said the effect that Nusrat had on the crowd, they see Pakistani, Afghans, white people, Arab, whatever, alike. Everybody was just in this state of being. And my dad was just like, I've never seen anything like that before in my life. And I am, count me as a fan, count me humble. Like, that guy is something else.
It's like Brown Woodstock, like straight up.
It really was Brown Woodstock. And my dad was notifying, like, my uncle was there with my dad. And, like, we saw all these, like, random aunties from our community that were typically on the conservative side, but they're all in the hall and they're all dancing around. And my uncle was just like, and he was pointing out all these like random people that are dancing and not really, they don't do that typically, but again, that was the effect of Nusrat. So
right.
And yeah, and then Nusrat also, I think in that Ashray Rai's first film, he had that one song, right?
Allah.
He definitely transitioned. And even in Mohra, I mean, where did that come from? That came from...
Came from Dhammaskalender. Yeah, for sure. I think it's very interesting that he was plagiarized or used as an influence a lot. You know, everyone down to like Red Hot Chili Peppers used him as a loop, his voice as a loop. And it's just, he's just a singular voice. There will never be another Nusrat. And, you know, he just really brought something to the table that no one else did. And that's what really made him him. And I think that's an incredible thing to achieve when you stand out from so many different artists and, you know, an entire generation can just say Nusrat and everyone knows exactly, you know, who they're talking about and what he did and what he brought to the table.
Right.
But, you know, besides just him and Rahat, which, again, they're going to be the kind of mainstays, you know, the Sabri brothers were big. If you're familiar with Taj Dare Haram, which is a song that Atif actually covered in Coke Studio and became very, very famous recently in the last few years. That's originally a Sabri Brothers song. And, you know, Amjad Sabri still comes on Coke Studio and does some, or is it Amjad or the other one? One of them.
The one that passed.
Surviving
the,
one.
I believe. Okay, I don't know. I think we have to, I got to research that.
Yeah.
R.I.P. though, I believe it was Amjad Sabri that did pass, but yeah, they do have a lot of Tazar Haram was one. If you guys have seen Bajrangi Baijan with Salman Khan, which Adnan Sami did an amazing job. I didn't realize I was Adnan Sami singing that.
Yeah,
that's also a Sabri Brothers song.
Yeah, there's so much, and then also, you know, one of the few women. And I think that, you know, in this season of Pakistani things, we touch upon this a lot. There's always kind of like this exclusionary aspect of keeping women out. And Qawwali is no different. You know, there's this pure, unadulterated sexism when it comes to the houses and who can come on and who really has the talent to to come on and be a Qawwal. And yeah. Abida Parveen is probably, you know, the most famous woman to break through that. And right. Make a name for herself. And, you know, she's got some beautiful, beautiful Qawwals that my mom is a huge fan of. And, you know, my mom is the OG feminist dog. She's been listening to Abida for years. And it's great. I mean, I think that if you really wanted to, there's probably like 10 songs that everyone should start off with. And they're all Nusrat songs that really get you into the idea of what it is. And if you listen to the different variations, like you said, there'll be one that's like 5 minutes and the very same song, like sound somewhere else and some other performance will be like 45 minutes. You're like, how is that even possible? And it's like jazz. Like they just kind of riff their way through it.
It's amazing because you'd feel that to last a 45 minute long song, you would have to be someone who's pretty fit in shape.
For the most part. He is though. Yo, I have mad jealousy about his mobility.
Healthy. Yes, he's
healthy boy.
Very healthy boy. But to loop you guys in, that might be a little bit confused by our vernacular. A lot of Qawwali artists tend to be on the heavier side. Big, big people. But I also am convinced that that's the only way you can develop that kind of voice. Start from the navel and below, like where that that guttural sound starts and right? It's amazing.
You gotta have some big lungs for sure. But the man, the man is very flexible. Like I, you know, if I squat for too long, I get sore. I got to like sit down. I got to find a chair. This man is like sitting cross, like, you know, bow leg or cross leg, not bow legged, cross legged for hours and has no problem whatsoever. He's doing like basically yoga on the stage. I'm like,
oh my God, for like, okay, 20 hours. Yeah, okay. I refuse to believe there's any bones or cartilage left in their legs. But
yeah, he was huge by the end of his career. You know?
Dude, yeah,
it's crazy.
Abida, though, she strikes a special chord for me, especially because, as you mentioned, that women are not typically on the Qawwali scene, right? There's a lot of men that ran it. And so I went to Pakistan in 2003 for my cousin Essenpai's wedding, and my cousin Mansoor had me in his Corolla. We were driving around, you know, doing the typical. We were going out to get some milkshakes. He was playing Abida Parveen, and I didn't know it was Abida Parveen at the time. I was about 15. And I was listening to Mahiyare Goroli Bardi, Mahiyare Goroli Bardi, right? And playing, and no disrespect to Abida, obviously, but I her voice is such a way too where I thought it was actually a man singing. I was like, who is this? He's like, dude, this is Abida Parveen. And I was like, this is Abida Parveen, and I was shocked, but at the same time, such a good song, such a banger.
Such a banger.
It really is.
I think so to speak to that first point, I think it goes back to the sexism. You know, I think a big reason why Abida did make it was because she did kind of sound like a dude. And they were like, you know what? We'll let this one slide. And that's just how I imagine in my head the voices and that conversation going. But I could be completely far off here. But I do know that there's a tradition of excluding women from the houses, from, you know, the ustads, and there being a very kind of rigid kind of, you know, selection process, and you can only be from certain families, and you have to go to one of the houses at a very young age. It's basically becoming a Jedi. I mean, it's equivalent. Like, to become a Padawan, you got to be somebody, all right? Like, you got to be Anakin. You can't just be walking up in someone's house and be like, yo, teach me the Qawwal, which I think is really interesting because I don't know if you saw this, but there's one of the most recent, I don't know if it's the most recent winner or the last season or whatever, of Indian Idol, this guy named Sunny Hindustani, or that's what he called himself. And this guy, you know, he used to be just a shoe shiner from the streets, no actual proper training, but, you know, go YouTube him right now and just watch his performances. Close your eyes. You'll think it's Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan singing. He absolutely, like, just blew it out of the park. He ended up winning the season because he was so incredible. And I think that that's going to open up the door for a lot of new artists, because first time I think I've really seen someone not classically trained in one of the Qawwal houses actually be able to pull it off in a pretty respectable fashion. I mean, he crushed it. And I think that's the first time I'm seeing it, because, you know, we see a lot of covers of Qawwalis, especially in like Coke Studio and whatnot, but we never see someone really take the old song and do justice to it unless it's another Qawwal. So let's see where this goes. I mean, I think this could open up the door to a lot of new artists.
That's awesome. No, I'll definitely keep an eye out for him. But it's funny, I had a friend whose father was friends with a sect of the Sabri brothers, if so. And you mentioned they're sort of like Jedi's kind of Padawans, where you sort of have to earn your stripes. And it's hilarious. It was exactly that. The top dogs, meaning the guys that were singing up front, that had all the notoriety and fame, they were treating the younger ones so bad, apparently.
Like trash.
Like just trash. Like John, the Jedi, go, right? Just like, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I remember I was at one Qawwali concert. His name is Dhruv Sangari. Amazing talent as well. One of the remaining Qawwal artists of today. I went to his concert and I was actually sitting with him. We had a mutual friend, shout out Altaf Ghori. And he's just kind of, I was like, oh, you make biryani? And I was like, yeah, I make biryani. And I was like, oh, I make it with aloo and stuff like that. He's giving me this look. He was just like, agar tum mere liye biryani banayenge aloo ke saath, then I'll throw it in your face, man. And I was like, whoa.
Those are strong words, man.
It's not fun and games, but
to translate, he basically just said, if you put potatoes in my biryani, I'm about to have fighting words for you.
Oh yeah. So just make sure you don't do that. But yeah, man, I mean, as we've seen, it's touching to Bollywood. You know, there's a lot of Qawwals to Parda from Uncle Anthony. was a qawwali that I loved, you know, in Bollywood as well. But it has had a wide reach, and there's a lot of those artists like Nusrat, or excuse me, like Rahat, and to name a few, that are doing really, really well in Bollywood today. And a lot of these influences come, you know, from the original qawwals, right, that were, you know, from Pakistan and such. So,
right, yeah, it's come a long way. I think it's a beautiful tradition. If you haven't, you know, listened to qawwalis, we'll make a playlist as always on Desi Standard Tunes to hook you up. There are some phenomenal, phenomenal qawwali songs out there that you should definitely be exposed to. And even if you don't understand the words, there's a reason why, you know, famous people from all over the world would fly and attend Nusrat Fateh Khan's concerts. It's because the beauty of his voice put people into a frenzy. And the way, the passion that with which he sang really inspired, you know, really millions of people. So I think it's a beautiful tradition that rose from the Indian subcontinent, especially Pakistan. And it's something that it's a gift for the world. And we're here, you know, we should enjoy it as long as we can. Because with things like this that are so exclusive, you never know when they may, you know, God forbid, die out. Or you might not see a talent like Rahat. Mm-hmm. For several years. So
yeah,
you got to enjoy it while you can. And that's, I think that's a big part of the tradition.
Absolutely. No, well said. And wrapping up here, you know, thanks again for listening. For those of you
excuse
listening,
the itch in my throat. I don't have COVID, I swear.
No COVID?
Okay, it's allergies. It's allergies. Afraid.
But, you know, for you listeners, if you find yourself one day walking, maybe in downtown LA, and you see music coming from afar, and you walk in, and next thing you know, there's a lot of middle-aged to older South Asian people in a frenzy. And there's people, you know, that are a little bit inebriated, dancing away in their own world. And a lot of hippies and a lot of eccentric people around. And you could think, what the hell? What brought all these people together? And then you look and you see a chorus of 9 to 10 gentlemen singing their hearts out with so much bass. You know you're at a qawwali concert. So
absolutely. And you should sit down and enjoy it.
Yes, enjoy it.
Milk it for all it's worth.
Exactly. Let's bring what our parents loved further into this generation. Maz Ali signing off here.
Maz Khan, don't forget to like, subscribe, comment, and share your feedback with us. Let us know if there's a specific qawwal that we've missed and you want to talk about. And we always look forward to engaging with you guys. Check out Desi Standard Tunes to see the playlist of qawwals. And yeah, we'll see you on the next episode. This is Maz Khan signing off as well. Stay easy out there, guys.
See you all in the next Sufi realm. Peace.
Peace.